Hey, do you guys hear about the new restaurant called Karma?
Wait, it hasn't even gotten to the punchline yet.
No.
Do you know who's laughing? He probably already knows all of these jokes.
He is the lord of dad jokes.
Tell us about this restaurant.
There's no menu. You just get what you deserve.
Oh my goodness.
I would like to reach out to our listeners and request that somebody go to each of their houses and slap them.
Can I request that the person who comes to my house and slaps me is the giant vampire from Resident Evil?
They're going to get slapped and they're going to like it.
She's not going to be able to fit through your doorway with those hips.
Lady D is going to be up in the slappy business. It's going to be great.
I'll come outside.
Previously on Bad Heroes.
You see Iris look frightened. She grips her head, and then she turns tail and sprints, leaping through the foliage on all fours deeper into the woods.
Tonner bucks the horse.
She's scared of something. Just remember that.
You see Iris leap across a quick-flowing stream, almost 15 feet wide.
Riva does not like the look of this stream. She's just going to try to jump clear across.
Ira takes out his hammock and just kind of wraps Ivan in it and is going to carry him back to the village.
The first thing you see is Nettle's apothecary. Ingrid and Nettle look out a small window and they both gasp. Tonmer, Gideon, you follow Iris up a steep incline. It has started to rain.
Gideon pulls out the devastating dog whistle and blows it.
You see her flinch and then she is gone.
Well, so much for that.
Ira is going to go into the apothecary. Nettle, you need to get Ephra now.
Tonmer is going to look at Gideon and say, I have to go warn them. If the village finds out before the pack, this is bad.
I'm not doing that zip line again. So go ahead, and I'll take Riva back towards town.
In the doorway, you see Ephra. Who was it? Now. Now.
Iris, it was Iris.
Oh, no.
Tonmer, you are moving through the woods, and so is Pax. You guys practically run into each other.
Drew called. What's wrong?
The pack's been broken.
I need you to talk to Ephra. Come on.
I liked Iris just as well as anyone else, but there's no coming back from this. You have got 24 hours to complete the wild hunt, Pax. It's your sworn duty as guardian, and if you don't do it, you know I will.
I'm afraid to ask this, but what is the wild hunt?
If one of our wolves harms an innocent, it's the pack's responsibility, the guardian's responsibility, to hunt them down and to take them out before they can do any more harm. The wild hunt means we have to kill Iris.
Where are average things manufactured?
Oh my
Why
gosh.
Are you still doing this?
Dad, please stop.
Because I think we can all agree we're having a great time.
Yeah.
We can all agree you're having a great time.
I am. They're manufactured at the Satisfactory.
Oh my God.
I hate this.
Oh, I see.
Hey. Yeah. Oh, I see.
All right. Do you guys remember what happened last episode?
What are we doing?
People got pissed.
Riva ran into a tree trunk.
Yeah, there was that.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Possibly the least important part of the episode. But yes, she did.
So there's an ice bath and people are pissed and Fire Lady mm-hmm. says people got to die. And now we're left mm-hmm. with a conflicting way to resolve this while keeping everybody happy. And thus, Bad Heroes.
Yes. Yes. So you guys are in quite the pickle. Okay, I'm going to bring us in.
A weakening fire cracks faintly in the hearth of the Covenant Inn, the side where Ari and Aelin sit, frozen over a deck of cards. Lamplight moves over every face in the room, casting shadows on already dark expressions. You four stand with Pax, listening to the distant voices of Ephra and Drew, working with Nettle and Ingrid in the back room to stabilize their son, Ivan. Ira, your hammock and vest sit on the bar, sticky with blood. It's still raining hard outside. You can see fat raindrops pummeling the dirt path through the windows and the open door of the inn. And though it's only late afternoon, the clouds block out the sun and make it feel later. The wind picks up, shakes the door on its hinges, and a cold wind moves through the room. The day is taking on a bitter chill, and from the time you spotted Iris in the woods to the moment you stand in now, you've all gotten soaked to the bone. Pax stands in the doorframe, blue pants dripping on the wooden floor, and looking as if they are steeling themselves to do something they absolutely do not want to do. Because in the wake of Ivan being bitten, Ephra has called for the Wild Hunt, a ritual in which the guardians of the pack hunt down an out-of-control werewolf and finish them, once and for all. You know something is not as it seems. So Celia and the pack stand at the precipice of war if the pact isn't honored. And you have 24 hours to figure it out. What do you do?
I say we get ourselves a good night of sleep.
let's crack this case in the morning.
Take a breather. Go to bed at 2 in the afternoon.
Hey, it's been a long day.
God, it's been a long day. I chased a werewolf today, so I don't think anyone can expect any more of me.
Tonrir is going to go to a more isolated corner of the inn to motion Pax over, and he will look at anybody else in the party to see if they would like to join in this conversation.
Gideon's going to follow you.
Ira will also join.
So will Reba.
Okay.
We're just like a pack of puppies.
Oh.
I am a cat, actually.
Pax joins the three puppies and one cat and is looking very stressed out. Very, very, very stressed out. And they join you and clap their hands together and go, well, we're fucked.
Tonmir purses his lips at that, nods a moment and says, yeah, maybe that might be the case. The first question I have is, are you safe with the moon coming out tonight?
You mean like, do we have to worry about me losing control?
If you're going to be in the middle of a hunt for somebody that you care for very much, yes, I think it is a valid question.
They look around the inn for a moment and kind of rub their hands together.
Yeah, I'm going to be okay. This isn't the first bad thing that's happened during a full moon. I mean, it's the worst bad thing that's happened during a full moon. The thing is, and I know we've talked about this before, but the reason I'm a guardian, the reason Solas and Harlow and Rora and Orland and Iris, the reason we are guardians is because we can do that. We can be around people and under stress, even in the middle of the full moon, and we're fine. That's what makes us guardians. It's not that we're bigger or tougher or stronger. This is that characteristic, that yes, I can do this, but Iris should be able to do it too.
Is there anything that could have changed that for Iris, or any kind of like spell or something that could create this issue? Because it sounds like this shouldn't be the case for Iris.
So I've been thinking, you know how you all guessed before that maybe Iris is under the influence of something. Gideon, you said you saw someone the first time Iris shifted. It was so sudden. It was so uncharacteristic. It was so unlike her. And I wanted to believe it was just a fluke. But I think you might be onto something.
So hold on. Does that mean that whoever did this to Iris is still out there and could possibly do it to one of you again?
Yeah, I think so.
Should we be doing the Wild Hunt, or should we be doing a wild mystery?
How about I take care of planning the Wild Hunt, and you take care of finding out what the hell is going on?
Well, I am an amateur sleuth, so.
Frankie, you're not allowed in this podcast.
Tonmir looks at the group and then back to Pax and asks, What evidence is needed that the wild hunt was finished?
I mean, I don't have to like bring a head back or anything. That would be kind of dark. It's
Pax like pulls out a chair and just sits, kind of looking at their knees for a second and goes, guys, I've never done a wild hunt. We've never had to. This has never happened. I mean, I don't think Ephra expects, you know, me to bring Iris on a platter or anything, but Ephra's a smart woman. I mean, she's going to know if Iris is dead or not. And the point of the wild hunt is to get them out of the picture permanently. I don't know any other way to do that.
But if we can figure out what happened and bring Iris back to normal, to her, you know, guardian self that would never do this, then we don't need to do the wild hunt.
Guys, I don't think it matters. I understand. I do what you're saying. And I think you're right. I think something is really, really wrong. When we were walking to camp the first time and you guys were talking about the quicine mushrooms, when you were asking if their effect could be reversed, I think you're freaking right. But even if we figure out what happened, the problem is, I don't think it changes anything. Even if it wasn't her fault, she still did it. And by law, that means she is finished. We can plead our case. We can go to Ning. The rest of the guardians are on their way here. And when they get here, at least a few of you will need to come with me to camp to testify before Ning. You can ride on our backs if that's not too indignant. We move a lot faster than you can. But even if this wasn't Iris's fault, Ivan still, he's either cursed for life or he's going to die. And according to the law that we've all been following that keeps the peace for everyone, we still have to get rid of her.
It seems awfully convenient that this happened to her on the night of the full moon, just as we arrived. Pax, I can empathize with what you're enduring. I would like to confer with my group and see if we can help quickly and give you some time to process what you need to do.
Thank you.
Tonrir is going to motion to the group to move away from Pax and give them time to process what they need to do while they're sitting down on the chair.
So the whole group just kind of shuffle, shuffle, shuffle.
Yeah, just like group huddle, shuffle, shuffle.
Yeah, group huddle. Come over.
By the way, this whole time, Ari and Aelin are just watching you guys with absolute saucer eyes. It looks like they're like kind of afraid to move from their table because they've been being ignored thus far. And like, it looks almost like they're afraid that if they get up, they're going to become a part of this conversation, and they do not want to be.
I get that. That's understandable right now.
Do you guys shuffle sort of outside?
Shuffle, 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 shuffle.
Yeah, if that's where a quiet space is.
Okay. You guys are able to stand on the dirt path beneath the eaves where the roof overhangs the building. So you're not being rained on, but you're still outside. And your voices are to some extent...
Are they kind of covered by the rainfall?
Yeah, the sound of the rain, which is absolutely coming down, does disguise your voices. So you can speak in confidence.
Once they're all outside, Riva stands next to Tonrir and says... Okay, so when you said... It's awfully convenient. Do you think that they think we did this? Because that would be bad, especially because the next thing that I was going to say was that when Pax was like, Iris just needs to be out of the picture permanently, and then she looks at Tonrir pointedly and makes a circle gesture with her hands in the shape of a hoop.
Tonrir nods and says... This was an alternative that I was thinking of.
Because that would look bad, though, right? If they think we did this?
Tonrir shakes his head and says, I don't think that they believe that we did this, but I definitely feel like somebody tried to frame it like that because the first encounter was with us, and had it gone awry, we wouldn't be here. I don't know if that was an attempt on our lives or not. So for us to be out of the way would have been convenient for them, whomever that is, because the next strike would have been against the village to cause the wild hunt to start, to cause the contract between them to be broken. Who has the most to gain from such a thing happening? If we figure that out, we'll know where to go. If we need to, we could provide an alternative with the hoop to allow her to live, but we don't know what that's going to mean for her. We could see about parting a trophy from her, like a paw or something like that, to sate the desire of the villagers.
I don't know that we need to do that. Let's not do that. Don't cut her hand off.
Wait, so Iris is going to speak up and say, none of this is sitting right with me. If we send Iris through the hoop, we may be sending her to another death sentence. And a death sentence here doesn't feel right with what we know about who Iris is. This isn't right. I feel like we need to get the story, we need to understand why it happened, and then present that to camp and to Cecilia and let them decide. Maybe the Wild Hunt is not the answer.
You heard Pax, though. Seems that they're hell-bent on it. At least one of them is.
Well, maybe Iris shouldn't be the target of the Wild Hunt. If we have the story, we know who the target is. And maybe it is Iris. Maybe after we learn the full story, that is what needs to happen. But I don't think we have the full story.
No.
Gideon kind of speaks up at this point and says, if we are able to track down Iris, first, in order to satisfy the Wild Hunt, we don't necessarily need to send her to the Queen. What if we sent her to Vesper?
Well, we would have to take her to Vesper with us.
She'd still be out of the picture.
Tonrir nods at that and says, yes, and maybe it'll satisfy what they're looking for. But that does not outrule that we need to send somebody through that hoop, so hopefully the guilty party that we find is indeed a werewolf.
So what are we going to do now?
I think now the most important thing is to track down who is responsible.
Should we start talking to people? I mean, maybe we can start with those people in the Covenant Inn, Ari and Aelin.
I do agree that we should start with everybody that's in the inn to ascertain information, if not motive.
Is, what's her name? Alchemist?
Oh, Nettle.
Yeah. Is she in there?
She's in the back.
I think as you guys are finishing up this conversation, you actually see Ingrid and Nettle emerging from the back room. And Ingrid still has her hood up, and she's pulling her gloves back on, and Nettle is walking in tow.
I was just going to ask, did we ever find out why Ingrid's hands are all...
Mm-mm.
Nope.
Okay,
cool.
Tonrir looks to Gideon and then nods over to Ingrid.
What? What are you...
You can go talk with her, and then I can go talk with Pax, and then you two, and he looks at Riva and Ira and says, you two can talk with some people inside the inn, see if we can get any other information.
Okay, so Nettle and Ingrid are together?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're walking out together.
All right. Gideon looks at Tonrir and then kind of like rolls her eyes. Fine. And just makes her way towards where Nettle and Ingrid are.
Okay. They see you approaching and, you know, you can still hear Ephra and Drew's stressed voices coming from the back room. How do you like approach them?
Stiffly.
Okay. Okay. But you're clearly walking at them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think Ingrid like curls a finger and goes to lead you outside. Do you follow?
Yep.
Okay. She heads outside and, you know, without turning, without looking at you, just starts heading straight towards the apothecary.
All right. Let's go to your secondary location.
All right. Although I don't think the cold is bothering you. Nettle is kind of bundled up into herself and she's shivering a little bit. And as you guys head into the apothecary and open the door, Ingrid holds it open for you and says,
we've done all we can. Now there is only waiting. It's up to Ivan now.
Click.
Okay, bye. Click.
Okay, toodles.
Sorry, the immediate thing that came into my head was from like Brooklyn Nine-Nine to be like, let me give you some advice. I don't care about that.
Oh no. You don't care even a little?
I mean,
the silence speaks volumes.
Don't answer that. Ingrid says that, and Gideon just says, okay, it's good that you were there to help him. Anyways.
After you and Nettle go inside, Ingrid closes the door against the rain and stands there covered from head to toe, dripping on the floor. Nettle takes off her coat and like wrings it out and shakes her green hair and sends water splattering everywhere. And they both just look at you.
Hello.
Hi. can we help you? Like, we've had kind of a traumatic day already. And it's, like, also not over. So, like, do you need something?
Obviously.
Okay, well.
So you are, as it appears, an expert in the local fauna and flora and how to use it for medicinal purposes. Gideon kind of gestures to everything in the shop.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And all around the shop, you see these strange poultices and tinctures and animals in various states of taxidermy. And the outside of the building was covered in moss, and some of the inside is covered in moss. It is a very weird place to be standing.
I feel like I asked this before when they weren't as forthcoming with information.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember if I asked Nettle if there were things, like if there were potions or things that she made that were harmful?
I don't think you asked that. I think last time you guys went in and you basically were like, does the forest have wolves? And she was like, goodbye, it's lunchtime at 9 a.m.
Because I remember asking who buys stuff and what do they mostly buy? And she said something like, they mostly buy like the cure potions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, locals buy healing potions. And Ari and Ayland work as merchants to carry other potions that she makes into Koldon to be sold.
Okay. Either in Gideon's view of what she can see on the shelves, is there anything involving that? What is it, a mushroom? That
quicine.
The quicine.
Yeah, that the wolves use.
Yeah, I think now that you know what it is, you see a little shelf of quicine mushrooms.
Okay, so Gideon kind of walks over to that and then looks back at Nettle and says, these mushrooms, what do you know about them?
The quicine mushrooms, yeah. Well, I mean, it's all in the open now, I guess, because I saw you talking to Pax. So they grow in the forest. That's why the wolves are here, more or less. And Solas and I help break them down. I mean, you can eat them raw, but it's kind of gross. So we help like break down their properties using alchemy so that the wolves can, you know, eat them and chill the hell out. That's kind of the deal.
Have you done any extra research on these? Do you know if there's any way to, in a sense, reverse that effect?
She stops and like frowns. And then she like jumps up on the counter and kicks her legs for a minute. And she says,
you know, I've been asked that one other time. I had a student. They said that they came all the way from Koldon. As I say this, this is going to sound really suspicious. And I just want you to bear in mind that this place is normally really chill and peaceful. And there are parts of the world where alchemy, where magic is not appreciated, is not even allowed. You know, so I thought this person had been forced to practice in secret for some, you know, non-nefarious reason. So try not to judge me too hard when I tell you that I've never seen what they look like. You know, they would come cloaked from head to toe, not like, you know, not Ingrid. I know that's her calling card. I know what Ingrid looks like. But this student, they were good. They progressed really fast. I haven't seen them in a while, though, because honestly, they asked me that same question. And I got really, really uncomfortable. And I told them that I didn't have any more to teach them.
And you haven't seen them since that?
No. They were coming for probably 6 months. God, I mean, they're better than Solas. And Solas is good. Honestly, they might even be better than me. They are real smart. And now I'm thinking that maybe that wasn't the best idea, judging on how you're looking at me right now. Did I do something wrong? Like, what does this have to do with anything?
Listen, Nettle, I'll tell you why I'm asking you these questions, but I would really appreciate if you could answer this first. Do you know of anything that this mushroom can do that could have negative effects on the pack?
I mean, yeah, you know, it's... It's kind of one of the basic principles of alchemy. You take a substance and you can reverse its effect. A good enough alchemist can take a healing potion and turn that shit upside down and make it poison. So you give me any substance with a benefit, and if I'm practiced enough, if I'm powerful enough, I can turn it around and make it something harmful. So, I mean, yeah, that's more than possible.
Do you believe that this student was capable of doing that? If they were better than Solas, if they were potentially better than you at alchemy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they could have, but they don't know about the pack. I mean, they don't, nobody does. None of the visitors know anything. I mean, I remember you guys trying to talk to us. We are tight-lipped as hell. We don't even really talk to strangers. It's just that, like, they would... Nettle jumps down and very lovingly touches the edge of a butterfly. Like, she has this massive wall of butterflies pinned. And she goes, God, they offered me rare specimens. And that's like my love. They're easily responsible for half of my butterfly collection. And I didn't think they knew anything.
Well, Nettle, you're right in saying that this town is very tight-lipped. But we, obviously, me and my friends came here on a hunch, and we followed that hunch to the truth, even without your help. So I think it's very possible that somebody else could have done the same. Why I'm asking you these questions is because when Iris first turned, when she first shifted and was filled with that rage, we were all there. And I believe I saw some kind of movement in the distance that happened just before she, how do I want to say this? She got mad. just before she turned on us and turned on her own pack. I'm highly suspicious that somebody is using this particular substance in the way that you described.
Well, fuck, that's really, really bad.
Yep.
Sure is.
And pan over.
I forgot where Reva and Ira were going.
I think just in to talk to like Aelin and Ari.
Oh boy, I gotta remember what their voices are.
I'd like to talk to this NPC. God damn it.
Yeah, they were in like episode fucking like 27 or something. Ira, Reva, what are you doing?
Are they sitting in that like set of chairs by the fireplace?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Reva walks over there and just flops down in one of the other chairs opposite them.
Mm-hmm.
Ira goes with Reva and kind of like with a sigh sits down, like getting prepared to talk about some tough stuff.
And Reva looks at the two of them and says, "Hey, so what a day, huh?"
How about this weather we're having?
I love Reva so much.
Iris says, "So I'm sure you guys know that some stuff is going on. What do you know about what's happening with Ivan and everything?"
Ari squints at you for a moment, and then looks up to Pax and goes, "Hey, Pax, these two on the level or what?" What is this voice? What is Ari's fucking voice? Is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
Ari sounds like Ari's from New York City.
Yes,
fantasy,
I love it.
Fantasy New York. And Pax just looks up and goes, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're with me. You can talk to them, Ari. That is the least of our worries right now. Go for it." Aelin leans forward and puts his long fingers together and says, "I think we know what you know. I think we know that Ivan was bit and it was Iris. In fact, it sounds like you know more than we do."
"Do you know Iris pretty well?"
Aelin taps his fingers together and looks at the table and says, "Yes. I thought I did, anyway. We do archery together. She's quite good."
"Why would she do something like this?"
"Intentionally, I don't think she would."
"I don't think she would either. And I don't know her that well, but, you know, from what I know of Pax and what Pax has told me of Iris, you know, it doesn't strike me as something that she would do. So how could this happen?"
"I mean, you know how lycanthropy works, don't you? It's not exactly a blessing."
"Right. I understand that, but I also understand that, you know, Iris has pretty good control over her situation and that this is not some kind of accident that could happen at any time to Iris. It doesn't sound like that's the situation. It sounds like something else.
Aelin leans forward and looks you in the eye. He has like really, really striking eyes. And he says,
do you have any idea how many people the average werewolf has killed before they move here?
No.
It's not a zero number.
Riva has a thought.
Go ahead.
She also leans forward, putting her elbows on her knees, and says, so you guys travel a lot, you know, between here and Kuldan and other places.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of anyone who, you know, like, has beef with the werewolves here? You know, like maybe someone who knows someone that a werewolf hurt before they got here?
I mean, basically anyone who has encountered a werewolf outside of this sanctuary has probably encountered them for a very, very bad reason. But no one knows they're here. That's why we're so careful. Because if people did know they were here, they would be an incredible target. I don't know anyone personally, if that's what you mean, that has a problem with them.
Yeah, but like maybe someone figured it out.
Are there a lot of people who visit here?
No, there's no reason to.
Yeah. Has there been anyone recently, anybody you've, you know, maybe brought back from Kuldan or from anywhere else that you've traveled?
Periodically, traders will come and stay at the Covenant Inn. We have people periodically come and help us with shipments, but we keep an eye on them. And they don't go in the woods.
Hmm.
The truth is, Ari and I only bring people here that we know won't ask questions because they don't care.
Yeah.
So no, I can't think of anything. What are you saying is happening?
Look, this situation is horrible. What happened to Ivan is horrible. And what Iris did is horrible. But from what everyone is saying, this isn't Iris. This isn't like her. And I want to know the whole story. I want to know how this happened so that everyone can understand. And so this doesn't happen again. So there isn't anyone else who is hurt.
That's what the Wild Hunt's for. You know, that's the purpose of it, right?
I understand that, but if something happened to Iris, it could happen to someone else, and someone else can get hurt. I don't want that to happen. You know, we do the Wild Hunt, and Iris is gone. If something happened to Iris, if someone did something to Iris, they can do something to another guardian. They can do something to another werewolf, and that werewolf can hurt another person in Cecilia.
Somebody did something to Iris. It's called making her a werewolf. And I think that happened a long time ago. Listen, Aelin. We don't have to sit here and talk about this with people who don't even live here, with people who don't even know what they're talking about.
And Ari goes to stand up.
Iris says, you don't have to talk to me. You know, I just want to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And if you think that the Wild Hunt is going to be the answer to this problem, to what happened to Ivan, then we can leave it at that.
Ari and Aelin stand up and give you both a long look, and then turn and head towards the stairs. And as they pass by Pax, Aelin puts his hand on Pax's shoulder and gives it a squeeze. And then Ari and Aelin are gone up the stairs of the Covenant Inn to their room.
Ira gets up and is going to walk over to Pax.
Riva, what are you up to?
Riva's just going to sit for a moment and stare into the fire.
Okay.
Since they have been in that conversation for a while and Tanrir had gone over to Pax about the same time that they had gone over to the table, would there have been a conversation happening up to the point that Ira walks over?
Sure. Yeah, let's have a little conversation before Ira heads over.
Cool.
Because these things are happening simultaneously. So while Riva and Ira are talking to Aelin and Ari, and while Gideon is over at Nettle's Apothecary, you approach Pax. And they are looking at the ground sort of between their knees. And you hear them saying very, very softly,
the sun and the moon still move in the sky.
As he approaches, Tonmir pulls up a chair and sits down in front of Pax and says, and I am not alone.
Pax looks up at you and smiles. The first smile that you've seen since this whole thing. And they say,
Hey. Hey.
How are you doing?
Bad. Super bad. Super duper bad. Yeah, can I talk to you out loud? It will help me.
Tonrir turns the chair around so that it's backwards facing so he can lean forward on the back of the chair, and he crosses his arms and nods to Pax, listening.
Pax rubs their forehead and says, I got turned outside of Vire on a ship, of all places. I was a deckhand. And I knew after the first change that I was not going to be welcome in the world anymore. But I'd heard of a pack that lived peacefully somewhere near the heart of Vire. You have to understand, Vire is a place so cursed, they have bigger problems than werewolves. It took me a year to find Sanguine Silvis. I made a lot of mistakes that year. Really, really serious mistakes. I didn't have any help. I didn't have any idea how to control it. Tonru, people died. At least I think. Memory doesn't work so well when the shifts are new, but this is hard to reconcile that with ending Iris after just one mistake. It's not fair. None of it is fair. But this place, this piece, it exists nowhere else in the world. Nowhere. This is the only place that werewolves can live peacefully in harmony with people. It is the only place in the whole freaking world. And if we let that peace break, every life in the pack is more or less over. Do you understand?
Tonrir takes in a deep breath, finally nods, and he says, I do understand. And I do not want to see the balance struck aside any more than you do. What you have achieved here, what all of you have achieved here, is, it's unfathomable. And you are right. We can't let that happen. I believe that the pact was written for werewolves who got out of control, who were unable to achieve that balance, and as such had struck out against those who were innocent. But I don't think that's the case here. I think somebody wants this war. And if we're going to do this, then we have to act first. And so I need to know a couple of things from you. Firstly, are you going to be able to do this, what we need to do right now?
You mean figure this out, or you mean the Wild Hunt?
Figuring it out.
Yeah, I can do this, but I gotta level with you. I kinda gotta focus on making the Wild Hunt happen. What do you need from me? What can I do?
Tonrir looks at them with a bit more resolve and says, you can do both at once, Pax. We definitely need to find Iris, correct?
Yeah, but I don't think we should go find Iris right now. I think we need to figure out what we're gonna do with Iris before we go find Iris.
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about. We find her, and then as far as getting her, and he does the air finger quotes, out of the picture, if that means out of this forest, out of this village, away from here, I think we can do that too. But we need to go find her first. How soon are the rest of the Guardians going to be here?
As we hit this part of the conversation, Ira has headed over and comes in on the tail end of that question. Ira, do you sit down?
Yes.
Okay. Pax says, I hear what you're saying. I do. The Guardians will be here soon. I can't leave right now. I can't leave till they're here because I can't leave Cecilia unprotected. Whether it's her fault or not, she's out of control. So I'm staying right here until the rest of the Guardians come. But to your point, I think we can leave maybe Orlin and Rora here to keep an eye, because it sounds like you have an idea and I need you to pitch it to Ning. I don't think that there's merit in us finding Iris yet. We're going to need everybody together to take her down.
Tonrir nods at that and then looks out the window and says, All of the townsfolk aren't in this building. They aren't in the inn, are they?
No. I better go outside, huh?
Tonmer nods at that.
And as they get up, they turn back and say, you know, a lot of us change our names when we join the pack. My parents didn't name me Pax, but it's what I wanted to go by. It's what I wanted to do in this second life. Pax. Peace. I wanted to keep the peace. Can you help me do that?
We'll do our best, Pax.
We will strike that balance again. We will.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here. And they head outside and start patrolling the main drag.
I think I'm going to go see if Riva would like to talk with Smudge with me.
All right. I'm going to stand just outside, and I'll keep an eye toward the apothecary in case Gideon starts coming back.
Okay. All right, let's pan over to Gideon. So you stand in this room with Nettle and Ingrid, and Nettle has just told you that what you are afraid of is possible. It is possible to reverse the effects of the Quisene Mushroom, and they have recently had a mysterious student who they think is capable of doing just that.
So Gideon's going to say, what other information can you tell me about the student of yours? You said they came from Koldon, and they wore a hood, but what else did you glean from them?
So, oh, whoops, that's Pax. Hold on. Let me switch personalities.
They are really bent on secrecy. They even had a spell going. It made their voice sound like really flat. I couldn't tell you if it was high or low. I mean, I'm small. They're like average size. I mean, they're not a gnome. Honestly, their shape looked human, but I don't know anything about their voice and I don't know anything about their face. And as you are having this conversation, Ingrid sips discreetly from a flask. Make a perception check.
18 plus 8.
Oh, wow. Okay. That flask is full of blood.
Do I see that or do I smell it?
Both.
Cool.
Cool and good.
So, yeah, Gideon, upon smelling it and realizing what she was drinking, immediately turns her attention to Ingrid and just looks at her and says, so what's your deal?
Perfect.
What is your whole situation?
Ingrid looks at you for a long moment. At least you think she does, because of course you can't see her face. And she looks at Nettle, and Nettle nods and says,
yeah, I think we better lay it all on the table, huh?
And Ingrid lifts her gloved hands, which are noticeably gaunt, and she pulls down her hood. And you know now that it is not just her hands. She is completely skinless.
Oh, God, why? Why have you done this?
God.
So good. I love it. I love it.
You know, she has flesh, eyeballs, veins, muscles, and presumably beneath Christ. Bones.
Oh, God.
But she has no skin at all, and she looks back at you unblinking.
Well, how could she blink?
Exactly. Exactly.
God.
Oh my God, what is happening in this chat? Get it together. Everybody's messaging me at once that they're horrified. Hey, this is Dre Silvertooth, and thank you for listening to episode 35 of Bad Heroes, part 10 of the Wild Hunt arc. Dear friends, happy Pride. Happy Pride on the very last day of Pride Month. Getting it in just under the wire, as usual. We are so proud to have so many queer and allied listeners. For real, we love you, and we hope this show has been a welcoming place for you.
If you're interested, you can scoot on over to our Patreon and listen to a bonus Pride episode we recorded this month. It's a cast Q&A talking about our own queer identities and the identities of the characters on this show. It's free and available to everyone, so if that's your cuppa, all you have to do to check it out is head on over to patreon.com/badheroes. And hey, if while you're there you decide to become a patron at $2 or more a month, then we'd love to have you. We have monthly game nights with our interested patrons, a special Discord for you to chit-chat with us, and a growing library of patron-only content. Everything from episode bloopers to Q&As and art sketches. Also, we appreciate the support with our whole dang hearts. If you want to support us, but you fear commitment, may I recommend our brand new Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/badheroes. We just launched it this month, and for any one-time donation, you get access to some very cool Pride Month phone wallpapers Leanne and I made. We turned the awesome snake from our logo into every Pride flag we could think of, and would be happy to add any Pride flags we missed. Once again, that's ko-fi.com/badheroes. Music in this episode is Labyrinth by Sergei Chermisyanov, Seeker by Kai Engel, and Classic Horror 1 and Nervous by Kevin MacLeod. Our theme is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane. We also use sound effects by Martas and Goggs at freesound.org. You can find us on social media at Bad Heroes Cast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and you can email us at badheroescast@gmail.com. If you want to support this show, if this story means something to you, you can help us for free by introducing our show to a friend or leaving us a review on Apple or Podchaser. Last but not least, we want to thank Roll20 for sponsoring us and sharing our show with their community. Check out Roll20 at roll20.net and see all the cool ways you can build your virtual tabletop, letting you play with your friends wherever you are. I think that's it. The next episode will be out just as soon as we can get it to you. Happy Pride. See you next time.
Gideon doesn't really react when she does this, and Gideon stares at her and says, "That doesn't answer my question."
I am what's colloquially known as a blood hag. I drink blood, and my sisters wear the skin of their victims in order to move freely through the world. As you may have guessed, I do no such thing. So, look upon my skinless form in horror if you must, but know that I am exposed so as an act of kindness.
Gideon's like, "Oh, I'm curious now. I've been reading this book on necromancy and other things. And I'm like, hey, you're my buddy now.
Let's do a check.
Knowledge arcana?
Just give me an int check, an intelligence check. I don't know if it would really be arcana.
12 plus 4 for intelligence, 16.
Okay. You know that hags in general are kind of they're kind of viewed as a monster, you know, and especially blood hags. Like, that is a very feared creature, because it's almost like a vampire, but like way scarier. You know that they're rare, and you know that they're very, very strong.
Gideon hasn't reacted in any kind of fear or horror or anything. Mostly just kind of, that's interesting. She's kind of studying what she can just from appearance and obviously what Ingrid is saying. And then Gideon says, "And what is it that you do here in Sosalia?"
"I am an enchanter. I enchant bits and bobs, and Ari and Aelin take them to Koldon. I enjoy the company of Nettle. I enjoy the company of Ephra. I live here. It's as simple as that."
"And do you know anything about Nettle's student?"
"No."
"Well, okay.
Well, my work here is done.
And then Gideon turns around and leaves.
Okay, great. They both watch you go, and Ingrid flips her hood back up.
Gideon, heading out of the apothecary and seeing Tonnerre kind of waiting, is going to just walk towards him and relay the information about the student.
Mm-hmm.
Size of the student, two questions, actually. Would Tonnerre have heard the outburst that Ira and Reva heard at their table?
Yeah, like what Ari had to say about, like, this is just werewolves, man. Like, I don't know why you're having a CSI episode about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Ari is dwarf? No.
Yeah, halfling. An androgynous halfling. Yep.
The point that I'm going for is whether or not, as Gideon's relaying this information about the student, if the physical description matches Ari.
No, Ari. Okay. Ari is a halfling, and therefore, like, although, of course, like, you are well aware that people are perfectly capable of disguising themselves using magic to be, like, one size up or one size down. So appearing to be a different race is certainly not impossible, but based on description, you would think that the approximate size of this person would be human or elven.
Okay.
Obviously, based on what I've told you, we don't have much to go on as far as identifying this mystery student.
Tonnerre nods and says, well, Pax is patrolling. The other two are inside. Perhaps we should get inside as well, out of this rain.
As Tonnerre opens the door and ushers us in, Ira and Reva are leaving.
So you guys bump into each other, like, right outside the doorway of the Covenant Inn. Yeah?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And you guys are under the eaves, kind of where the roof overhangs the side of the building, so you're not getting rained on. To your left, you guys can see over to Smudge's general store, and you guys actually see that he is doing the equivalent of, like, you know, what a GameStop would do at night, where they, like, pull down the big metal sheet. Smudge looks really panicked and is, like, putting every protection over his shop right now, as if he's, like, he's scared of a werewolf, right? Like, he just watched Ivan, who was really, really injured, get carried through town. He is locking up hard. And you four stand in front of the Covenant Inn together.
Tonnerre looks between the other three and look at Ira and Reva and say, so, anything of note?
Well, so Reva and I talked to Ari and Aelin, and there wasn't much they could tell us. Ari thinks it's just werewolves, and when we suggested that it was something more, they got up and left. So not sure how much we can get from them.
Well, Aelin did mention that, and this should come as no surprise, but there's a lot of people who would like it if these werewolves were gone. But the only thing keeping them safe is that nobody knows they're here. Except somebody does. My money's on the fact that somebody knows that they're here and they're trying to stir up some shit.
Tonnerre then looks over to Gideon, kind of pointedly, for her to iterate her points.
Gideon doesn't say anything.
Gideon said... Gideon said that there was a student that had come to the apothecary that had been rather excellent at their craft, but we don't know much about them. They were cloaked and hooded and were using some type of voice thing. He, like, raises an eyebrow back to Gideon.
Well, if they were so disguised, is it possible that this person is someone that the villagers would know, but they don't want the villagers to know what they're doing?
That would be a good assumption. It could be somebody that's in the pack that doesn't want the pack to know what they're doing. Tonnerre looks outward toward the forest, and he calls Rothawain nearby to perch on his shoulder.
Hey, Reva. Make a will saving throw.
What the fuck? Excuse me.
Perfect.
That's a 9.
Okay. Nothing happens that you can see. You just have this feeling that you're being watched. Like eyes on the back of your head, you know?
Reva whips around.
You don't see anyone.
Tonnerre looks at Reva, says, what is it?
Nothing, I guess. I just thought I thought someone was there, but I don't see anything.
And as you say that, you see four massive shapes emerging from the woods at a charge. And as these huge shadows approach Pax, Harlow, Solas, Orland, and Rora all shift back to their human, elven, and gnomish forms in motion, skidding to a stop before them and panting heavily. They look like they've just spent 20 minutes to half an hour at a dead sprint. And you hear Solas and Pax start talking very quickly.
Tanra looks to the group and then nods toward the guardians and says, "Shall we join them?"
"I suppose."
Riva nods and she starts heading over after throwing one last glance over her shoulder. She has a hand on the hilt of one of the daggers at her belt.
You guys pass Ivan's roan horse, which is tied up outside of the Covenant Inn, and you guys head over to the remaining guardians. And you hear them at the tail end of the conversation of Pax explaining what's going on. And the other four look totally crushed. But Pax has sort of steadied themselves and is standing authoritatively and says, "All right, the day is drawing long and we need to make good time. We have an idea. We have something to try, but we need to speak to Ning. Orland, Rora, you stay in Sosalia and you protect the town. Don't let Iris touch anyone else. I will call for you when the hunt is on. The rest of you, shall we?"
"Onward, we shall."
Okay. Harlow, Solas, and Pax all shift right before you. They let out that howl again, and they become far, far bigger than they were. And Harlow in particular is huge. And they shift down to stand on four legs, and Pax gestures for you to get on.
Is Harlow the one with the wheelchair?
No, Orland has the wheelchair.
Oh, Orland is, mm-hmm. Sorry.
Orland, okay. And Rora. Orland is a human barbarian with a wheelchair, and Rora is a gnome.
And Orland and Rora are the ones staying behind?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Harlow is massive. You get the impression that, like, two of you guys could fit.
Okay. Riva approaches kind of gingerly because she doesn't know what is, like, proper. How tall is... Can she just hop on, or does she have to, like, climb?
Who are you climbing on?
Harlow, I guess.
Okay. Harlow is like really tall and really big, even on all fours. I think that like their back stands at like 5 feet, but they like sort of crouch down so that you can get on.
All right. Yeah. Riva's just kind of like, "Thanks. Pardon me. Excuse." And she just like kind of clambers on, like onto like just behind their shoulders.
Who else is?
There's room for one more on Harlow, one on Pax, and one on Solas.
Ira's going to hike his leg over Solas and grab onto his fur.
Solas lifts one of his big front paws and reaches back and like places it over your hand for a second. And it's like massive, like your hand totally disappears. And he gives it kind of a pat and then puts it back on the ground.
Gideon's going to walk towards Pax.
"Wolfie back, am I right? Get on."
"It never gets better with you, does it?"
"Nope."
"Just gets worse with time."
And yeah, Gideon just hops on.
Okay.
I guess Tanra will jump on with Riva just because of the weight.
Okay. Are you big spoon, little spoon?
Probably should be big spoon in this case.
If he was little spoon, Riva's so small, her arms would just be like...
Just be a backpack.
You could do. I mean...
That's what it's like when I'm the big spoon, just a backpack. All right. Pax says, "Hold on." And I think you guys all grab at a big, big chunk of fur and off you go. The ride back to camp is uneventful, although everybody is on high alert. Several times the guardians stop and investigate nearby movement, but each time it turns out to only be deer leaping through the brush or small creatures moving through the trees. You arrive at camp just as the sun begins to dip in the sky, a good distance from kissing the horizon, but further from noon than you would like. You find preparations for the night celebration in full swing. Food is laid out at a long table near the fire, and a few bards are warming up on their instruments. And Ning leans on a grand red maple tree beside her house, the one that you communed with, Tonrir, and she's not alone. That same middle-aged woman you saw arguing with Ning that first night is beside her. And once again, you see a resemblance between them. They both have straight hair and brown eyes, the same round jaw and slight stature. Although where the other woman's hair is dark, Ning's has gone white with age.
And the woman beside Ning is holding a small throwing dagger, hung on a cord around her neck, and is nervously tugging it free and tossing it at a small wooden target with a red bullseye. And every time it sinks into the target, it vanishes and reappears on her necklace. Both women look very, very stressed, and they are discussing something in hushed tones as you approach.
Hail and well met.
So you guys pull up and dismount, and Harlow, Solis, Pax all shift back into their human and elven forms.
Tonmir is probably just going to wait for Pax to do the talking, at least initially.
Okay. You guys all cool with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So you guys pull up and you all approach Ning and the woman that Ning is with, and Ning kind of raises up and grips her cane and says,
"What is it? Why has Drew called?"
And very quickly, Pax explains. They explain everything. And as they go through this explanation, Ning doesn't look surprised. She looks solemn. She looks sad, but she doesn't look shocked. And as the explanation comes to a close, the woman beside her says,
"Mom, this sort of accident is a natural product of living so close to people, of repressing our nature the way we do." And Ning interrupts and says, "That's enough, Lena."
Gideon's not really doing much, but she's definitely eyeing Lena a little more closely.
I think Iris is just going to say, "It's Lena, right, you said?"
"Yes, this is my daughter, Lena," says Ning. "She is a nature scholar and the keeper of the records. Speaking of which, Lena, fetch the covenant, would you?"
And Lena nods and gets up and disappears for a moment as she goes to grab the covenant. And you guys stand for a moment with Ning while you guys wait for her to return.
Iris says, "Wow, Lena's a really good shot, looks like, with her dagger."
"Yes. She's not much of a fighter, I'm afraid. I got this for her. You throw it, and once it encounters blood, it disappears and reappears on her chain. It doesn't hit hard, but I think she appreciates the thought. I worry about her."
"Why do you worry about her?"
"I was a great warrior back in my day, and you have to understand I still put stock in strength. Lena, she is a scholar to the highest order. She lives for books. She lives for knowledge."
"What's up?"
"She is perhaps the least worldly person I have ever met."
I could take her on that title.
And then, you know, Lena shows back up and she blows dust off of a thin but finely bound tomb. Tome. That's for death.
Carrying the tomb back.
She pulls back this tomb and she goes, "All right, everybody, get in. We're in trouble." She comes back with a finely bound tome and cracks it open. And she says, she flips through the pages and she goes,
"Well, I don't need to look in here to confirm that biting a child is against the code, but I'll check exactly what it says, shall I?"
And Pax says,
"It doesn't matter what it says. Ephra is, God, how would you guys put it?"
"Pissed."
"She mad."
"Yeah, she's very, she's out for blood. And the rest of Sosalia will be too if we don't do something."
And Lena's flipping through the book and she says,
"Ah, there it is. The good people of Sosalia swear to keep the secret of Sanguine Silvis so long as they shall live. The pact swears to protect Sosalia from threats both external and internal in exchange for this secrecy, da-da-da-da," and like scrolls around a little bit with her finger and says, "Ah, here we are. Should a wolf use their curse to harm the innocent, then it becomes the pact's duty to ensure there is no second incident. Should a resident of Sosalia be bitten by a wolf of Sanguine Silvis, and thus either killed or inflicted with the wolf's great curse, the act shall be judged as attempted murder, and the wild hunt shall begin immediately. The werewolf must be removed."
Reva says, "So it says removed, right? Not killed?"
Ning grasps her cane and like taps it into the ground and closes her gold eye and says,
"Yes, but where could she go? There is no place in this world that we can send a werewolf that's having trouble with control where people will not die."
"Well..."
All four of the bad heroes just gesture at themselves. Like, why are we here?
What if the wolf was sent to a place where the people weren't really living?
I'm sorry. One moment. And Ning turns around and walks back into her house, and she comes out with tea. And she says,
God damn it.
If you'll indulge me once more, things are not as they seem. I am sure of it. Something is wrong. Like a rot that comes from within, I can feel a shift, a change on the wind. And I fear this will mean war between the pack and Sosalia. I do not know how to stop it because I do not know the cause. So I hope that you will join me in telling the absolute truth, because I want to hear the solution you have.
Gideon rolls her eyes and kind of huffs a little bit and then takes the tea and drinks it.
Okay.
For real this time.
Ning hands it out to the rest of you.
Does Lena get some too?
Nah. Lena has walked off and is now like helping with preparations.
Tonrier looks to Ning and says, would you like to go inside first before we discuss this?
Ning narrows her golden eye at you and then nods. And she throws back like an entire cup of the tea.
Tonrier downs the tea. And as soon as he feels the effect kick in, he says, I think it'd be worthwhile for Lena to be with us as well.
Lena, come here, please. And Lena approaches and tilts her head. And Ning hands her a cup of tea. And Lena eyes it for a moment. And then drinks it. Riva and Ira, do you guys drink as well?
Yeah, Ira drinks.
Yeah, Riva's sipping from her cup of tea as she follows the group indoors. I assume we're going indoors.
Yep, you guys head into Ning's house. And Ning settles down in her usual chair with some amount of effort. And she drums her fingers over her cane and says, all right, let's hear this idea.
Is Pax with us too?
They can be. Do you want them to come in?
Yes.
I figure it's probably worthwhile for an attestation, right?
Okay, yeah. Pax goes in and takes a cup of tea and downs it and settles themselves cross-legged on the floor.
And so Gideon starts off by saying, so your bylaws state the wolf that committed the crime has to be removed. It does not specifically indicate that they must die, correct?
That is correct.
Well, have I got a deal for you. No,
$9.99.
Gideon says, well, what if we had a way for Iris to be taken to a place and keep her life and be part of a humane study? Humane-ish study. Damn this tea.
Ning leans back and says, ah, yes, this cure business you spoke of. And then Ning looks at you, Gideon, and she reaches out her hand.
Gideon looks at it for a minute and then takes her hand.
She closes her eye and make a will saving throw.
Aw, boy-o.
4.
14 plus 4, 18.
Not enough. So you feel...
You die.
You don't... Oh, you don't.
14 plus 5, so 19.
Still not enough. So you don't feel, you know, you don't feel anything nefarious. You don't feel yourself being compelled to do anything beyond your will, but you do feel as if somebody is sorting through your mind, like someone is looking through you. And after a minute, Ning opens her eye and she smiles. And she pats your hand and she says, I have seen your heart, and it is good. You came to me in my dreams last night. Call me an old fool, but I trust you, Gideon Greyfrost.
I really look surprised.
Tomer quirks an eyebrow. Yeah.
The whole party's like, what?
What?
She has a heart?
Ning looks at your guys' faces and pats Gideon's hand and says, don't let her fool you. She's good in there.
Gideon looks a little flustered and frustrated and says, Of course I have a heart. I have a capacity for love. I love books. I love my home. I love my family. I think Tonrir is pretty okay. And the rest of you aren't completely terrible to be around.
She lets you have your hand back.
Ning folds her arms and says, I don't like it, but I think this is a reasonable compromise. The goal of the Covenant is to remove threats, to keep the peace. The goal has never been to punish those who make mistakes. It takes all of us to build peace, and only one of us to destroy it. I will negotiate with Ephra and send word. I should go now. There's very little time. Anything else?
Tonmer looks up and says, we may have an idea of what caused Iris to turn. We have hypothesized that the Quisine mushrooms can be used in an inverse effect to, instead of dulling sensations, to cause spikes of anxiety or anger. It is very feasible, according to the alchemists that we've talked to. And there was also a student that came to study this, supposedly from Koldon, that was masked and, well, concealed very, very well. Extremely well. Enough so that Nettle and even Ingrid, to what she knew, couldn't make heads or tails of who this person was. And we know that Iris turned suddenly. Twice. We think that somebody's using, potentially, alchemy from the Quisine mushroom to turn her. And they did so at distance, and they did so quietly. Whatever they were doing, they did it well. Who else in this village knows that much about alchemy? And as he says this, he's panning around, but he just has like a sidelong glance briefly at Lena.
Gideon has been staring at Lena the whole time.
Make a Gideon and Tonra, give me a sense motive check.
Oh, I got a nat 20 plus 2, 22.
Okay.
I'm at, so 16 plus 4, so I'll be at a 20.
Okay. She looks
guilty.
She looks nervous. She looks nervous. And Ning listens to what you have to say, and she says,
all the more reason to hurry. If that is true, if what you say is true, we have a lot of work to do. And we need to get Iris out of the way quickly before anything else can happen. I will speak to Ephra, and I will send word.
And before your eyes, you see, for the first time, Ning transform. She transforms into a black kite, a sleek, eagle-like bird. And she ruffles her feathers, and then she flies out the door.
Tonmer takes out a Sharpie and marks on his hand, talk to Ning about shape-shifting.
Get help making animal shapes. Lena looks at you, and I think Pax, like, stands up, and they say,
all right, I've got a lot to do.
And they step outside.
That
was, goodbye. <What?
Ooh. laughs> It sounded like they were gonna, like, they were prepping themselves to say really.
Okay.
I got a lot to do. Can one of you come with me and please explain how this teleporting someone into the middle of Vire is going to work? Because I'm gonna need to be really clear on the specifics if we're gonna pull this off.
Tonrir looks to Gideon.
Gideon's going to look at Tonrir, look back at Lena, and then look back at Tonrir knowingly, and then if you're wearing your pack, I guess she'll just kind of take the hoop from there.
Yeah.
So she takes the hoop from Tonrir's pack and then walks out with Pax.
Okay. And Tonrir, Ira, and Reva, you stand with Lena.
Well.
Well.
Awkward.
Tonrir, is the dagger on the necklace still visible?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tonrir looks in the general direction of where the target was that Lena was throwing at and says, so the target that you were throwing at, it wasn't paint, it was blood that was on there, correct?
I know, it's a little dark, but yeah, that's how it works.
And then Riva, you have a weapon that does like a blink back too, don't you?
It's her belt, but yes, the belt is enchanted.
Yeah, Lena, I think, leans forward and starts examining it and says, very similar magic. Listen, there's something you need to know. There's no nice way to put this. In short, we are predators and people are prey. Please don't take this the wrong way. I'm not threatening you. There's no better way to say it. My mother believes in harmony, in peace. And those are lovely, lofty ideas, but I am a realist. I have studied nature all my life. And whether we like it or not, there is a natural order. The more we try to repress it, the more it will find ways to manifest.
Tonrir looks at Lena and is going to attempt a bluff.
Okay, roll a bluff check.
I actually rolled it already. Came out as 16. It's 15 plus 1.
Okay, so bluff is an opposed skill against Lena's sense motive. So I will roll that for her.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, she rolled a 2, so I'm not totally sure what I'm going to add to that, but it's not going to be enough.
Okay.
So whatever you're, well, unless it's totally wild, whatever you're about to say, she's predisposed to believe it.
Yep. Tonrir is...
You are under a truth serum, though.
Well, and it is a truth.
Okay.
Tonrir is going to nod and say, yes, predators and prey are the natural order of things. On that, we can absolutely agree. And it is throughout all of that where balance is established, isn't it?
She tilts her head at you and smiles. And it's a lovely, charming smile. And she says, a druid. I knew you'd see it my way.
Lena, were you there the night that Iris lost control?
Okay, that was a little bit too direct for what I was going to do, but, you know, that's out there now.
I think Lena turns and she walks away.
Mm. Whoa, bitch!
And when you guys come outside, you guys go outside, yeah?
Yeah, I'm definitely following.
Okay. You three come out to see Lena disappearing into the crowd. And then you see Pax parting from Gideon and climbing up onto a log at the center of camp near the fire. You all see them looking out over the pack as everyone starts to notice them and take in their solemn expression, and the crowd falls silent. Solas and Harlow take their places beside Pax, and Pax says to their son, Auden, take the rest of the pups into our place now. And Auden starts to protest for a second, and Pax says, now. And it only takes a minute for Auden to gather up all the other kids and get them inside where presumably they can't hear this conversation. And Pax jumps right in and explains, there has been an attack on a resident of Sosalia by a werewolf, by Iris. There are a few startled gasps, and then it is so quiet you could hear a pin drop. Will one of the witnesses please confirm this for the pack? And Pax looks to you.
Tonrir nods.
It's true. We found Ivan with a bite, and Iris was nearby in her wolf form with blood on her teeth.
And we saw her run away, and we tried to chase her down, but she got away, so we don't know where she is now.
Pax says, they are under the effect of one of Ning's truth spells. They can't lie. Ephra knows. Sosalia knows. And the wild hunt has been called into effect tonight. And a few people have their hands held to their mouths. One elven man who looks a lot like Iris is crying. And Pax presses on. You all know how the wild hunt is supposed to end. An alternative has been proposed by friends of the pack. Tonrir, Gideon, Ira, and Riva. Instead of death, Iris would be taken to the capital city of Vire, where a cure for lycanthropy is in progress under Queen Saphira. And at Saphira's name, you hear whispers run through the camp, and they sound like fear.
Yeah.
Reva taking in the sort of undercurrent of apprehension at the mention of Saphira's name, speaks up and she says, "Now, I know it sounds bad, but here's the thing. I've met Queen Saphira, and I've also met Ephra, and the truth of the matter is, I'm way more scared of what Ephra will do to Iris if she finds her than the queen."
There's a couple people who, like, look appropriately frightened at that idea. But you still hear, like, people don't sound, like, happy about this. Pax clears their throat again and says, "Iris would be removed from camp and from Sosalia and held in the capital until cured, so she cannot do any harm. Is that right?"
Tonner nods again, but a little bit more solemnly.
And you hear, like, a couple of voices, like, coming up, you know, from the crowd, like, "How can we trust these people? How can we trust them if they work for Saphira?" And Pax clears their throat and they say, "Listen, it is not what any of us would wish upon one of our own. But should Iris go, she may still have a good chance at life. The people of Sosalia are voting right now to allow this possibility. And I believe it is in the spirit of the Covenant. So now, I put Iris's fate to a vote here. If you vote for her end, put your fist to the earth. If you vote for her capture and her exile to the capital, put your fist to the sky." And Pax proudly puts their fist to the sky. Solas and Harlow do the same. And with a rumbling of discussion, within a minute, most of the camp follows suit. And at the vote, Pax looks visibly relieved. "I know many of you loved Iris. I loved Iris. She is irreplaceable, and we will all feel the void of her absence for years to come. But we can rest a little easier knowing that one of the kindest souls to ever grace our lives is getting a second chance. During the hunt, Ning will place a barrier around camp, so those of you with less control don't have to fear the Guardian's absence. I would encourage anyone struggling to take the necessary precautions to sedate yourselves." And they gesture to the long tables, which are covered in food, teas, and drinks. And you can put together from context that at least some of that contains Quicine. And they continue, "As always, Solas has provided Quicine in a variety of forms, and the cages are available for those who believe it will not be enough. Ning will be here with you all, and you don't need to be afraid. The peace will survive this, and so will we. And with any luck, so will Iris." And Pax looks at you four fondly.
Tonwyr offers a weak but small smile in return. And Tonwyr is going to look quickly over to Gideon and say, "We need to check the Quicine."
Oh. Oh, no.